The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Stockhead Rock Yarn. I'm your host, Peter Strachan. Today, we're looking at the world of lithium, and to help us through this, we are delighted to welcome Juan Pablo Vargas de la Vega. And Juan Pablo, or JP to his friends, is the managing director of Galen Lithium, who have a project in Argentina. Welcome to the podcast, Juan Pablo.
Thanks, Peter. No, great to be here.
So, JP, you've had a fairly short history with this company, and it's basically yours. You put it together. Perhaps you'd just like to tell the listener how you've come from your background in finance and into the world of lithium.
Absolutely. Well, if I rewind time about a little bit more than 3 years ago, I was in Argentina on a site visit as an analyst, and I came across the opportunity of Hombre Muerto through one of my contacts. And interestingly enough, we drove by Hombre Muerto. I have the first picture of Hombre Muerto in my office, by the way, so it's a fantastic panoramic picture. I identified that there was a ground that I was owned by private people. They weren't owned by companies, on the edges of the salt flat of Hombre Muerto. So realizing that this opportunity meant that I needed to consolidate all this ground to have a project, hence a company, I got very rushed to trying to get some funding. And as soon as I came back to Australia, to trying to make it all work. So for a whole month, I tried knock on doors, talk to shells. I did everything possible trying to fund my idea. The problem is, at the time, no one was grasping my idea and no one wanted to put money on what I wanted to do, except my friends. But I didn't want to pass all the burden to my friends to get money onto the company. I said, look, guys, I'm going to go and do this myself. So I look at my bank account. I called one of my mates to see if he wanted to buy my old car, and he bought it. And on a Monday, I called my boss, and I'm resigning. By Sunday, I was in Argentina, and I was talking to people in Catamarca and negotiating all these tenements one by one. That took me around 6 weeks to get it all done, put into a Pty Limited that was called Blue Sky Lithium. And thereafter, I did a cap raise with contracts in hand. And then I did a backdoor listed through Dempsey Minerals. Dempsey Minerals then got rebranded into Galen Lithium. So all of this in a very short period of time. So from identifying this opportunity in September, we had a deal signed with Dempsey in February. This is February 2018. We finalized the transaction in May 2018. And then we branded Galen in a few months later. Since then, we're rushing to doing a lot of basic geology, which is like soil sampling, mapping. Then we did geophysics. We applied for drilling permits. And then we sank our first drill hole in late January 2019. So since then, it's been a bit of a bumpy ride with highs and lows. But this, for me, it's a marathon. So my goal is to get this project over the line. And luckily, we've been able to demonstrate that we have lithium and not just a small amount of lithium.
So JP, you're in a pretty good area there, a permit where up in Argentina, some of your neighbours include Galaxy with their Sal de Vida project, which is going through the feasibility stage as well. So it's a good neighbourhood for lithium.
Absolutely, the Hombre Muerto is the hot basin in Argentina. Just for the WA listeners, if they are familiar with iron ore, It's like, imagine, Peter, if I come to you and say, I have this paleo channel that goes off Mount Welbeck in Newman. You know, it's the same sort of idea or the same sort of thesis. So what I've done is I have proven that I have a paleo channel at Mount Welbeck. That's what we did with Candelas. Then the Hombre Muerto West project is equivalent to say, you know, I think that Mount Welbeck doesn't end right where it seems that it's end. It's undercover. So I went there and I did some more geophysics, drilled some holes, and proving that the cover that is at Mount Welbeck extends up to 2 kilometers, for instance, at Patapila.
Yeah.
So, and extends quite a depth. So we have today close to 1.4 million tons of resource estimate under the indicated category for the JORC 2012.
Lithium carbonate equivalent resource.
Correct. 1.4 million tons of lithium carbonate equivalent. So that's a fantastic number for us. Let me put this in another context. If you assume that a potential conversion of this resource into reserves by 50%, then you have around 700,000 tons of lithium carbonate equivalent into reserves. If you apply what Livent, which is our neighbors, and I'll get into more details in a second on that, Livent's production is around 20,000 tons of lithium carbonate equivalent a year. We will have, using that metrics, we will have 35 years of potential production at our project, which is longer than the 27 years that Livent has been operating since day one.
Mm.
So we got something interesting here.
So JP, how thick is the cover? I mean, I guess it sort of varies from, you know, 1 or 2 meters. What at the furthest from the center of the cellar, how thick is that more recent sediment?
At the very, very end, which is 2K inland, we estimate that cover to be around 60 to 70 meters.
Yep.
So it's not much. So, and this is a very, very, very simple way of operating once you go into production. We are studying to utilize ponds, and the pond system of what we identify is that we have enough ground in our tenement to lay ponds throughout Hombre Muerto West without having to go in to ask for permission to a third party for easement.
Yep.
So this is very important because our ground is large enough for that, and we can it's better to have all yourself than asking for permission to someone else, and then it's out of your hands. So that's, none of that is applicable to what we have.
So JP, the brine that's in these halite sediments, these salty sediments underneath your permits, does that flow to the surface naturally, or will you pump it out into your evaporation ponds?
We have to pump it out. So the way it works is you put production wells. The production wells could be any diameter between 16 inches to 12 inches. And then you have to keep drilling. And this is like a telescope. Imagine a telescope you expand, and it's got the same sort of shape, you know, a wider at the top, and it starts narrowing as it goes deeper. And then you put a pump right at the bottom, and that starts pumping the flows from the salt flat. And we have identified that our system is quite deep. And so this is, you know, keep us very optimistic about the prospect for having that our project is going to be viable.
Yeah, and have you done flow tests yet on that on those brines?
We have done flow tests at the exploration level, but we have to, in our next step, which into our feasibility study, we need to do this flow test, but we need to do this drilling that I was mentioning before. So those those wells will be a production wells in the end. So there's not waste in terms of, they will be part of the production capex. So you don't lose that money.
Yeah. So is there any replenishment of those brines? You know, do you pump the waste solution back down into the cellar, or is enough natural replacement of fluids coming from the surrounding mountains?
there is enough replenishment for what we want to do. So if you go about what Live, which is the only operation in the area to date, and 27 years later, from our understanding, there's the level of brine that has been taken after 27 years is marginal. Yeah. That's our understanding so far. And the why is this? Is because the basin is massive. If I can give you an idea, it's around 40 to 45 km long, by 40 to 45 km in width. So it's a big, big pond. So we ended per CBD. If you're familiar with distances, this is, you can go to Fremantle and back and still have spare kilometers to keep traveling.
Yeah, that's right. It's a fair way. It's like from the escarpment to, you can go from the city to Rottnest.
Ah, correct. Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, no, fantastic. So, because it's 20Ks to Rottnest plus, and yeah, so it's even more than going, because it's around 17, 18Ks to Fremantle plus 20. So there's still, you go, it's just to give a magnitude of how big this is. So, and also we have demonstrated that this basin is quite deep, something that it was mentioned early on in studies, but we are the first one that actually physically has sunk drill holes to that sort of depth and confirmed where the basement is. So this is, it is big.
Yeah. So there's a lot of volume of salt sitting underneath your permit. So what's the sort of tenor of the resource there with respect to lithium, and does it have potassium as well as potentially a byproduct?
Yeah, it does. It does. We actually, I was looking at the potassium levels in WA, and we come on top of most of them. Our grades are around 8,500 milligrams per liter at Ombra Muerto West for potassium. So that is a few thousand milligrams per liter higher than some of the prospects here. We are at a first pass of a study, which is our scoping study, PEA. We're not focusing on potassium today because we want to understand lithium better. But as part of the next step, we're definitely going to get a better understanding of how can we extract potassium from lithium, from these brines. But it's a big differential in terms of price. It makes more sense now that the price of lithium is lower, but once the price of lithium recovers, then the byproduct as per such, the percentage of your revenue, it becomes really small. So we have to do the trade-off study. It's something that we definitely are not ignoring, but we'll move forward and once we understand the lithium process better.
And your brine is quite pure. There's not a lot of harmful impurities there, which might cause difficulty in the processing.
That's correct. We have why Ombra Muerto is so important in the lithium space. Just a little walk into memory lane. The Live Incorporation has been operating in the salt flat of Ombra Muerto for 20 plus years. The lithium revolution started with the Sony Handycam, the first lithium ion batteries. They came from Ombra Muerto. So Ombra Muerto has proven for a long time that lithium from brines can be converted into batteries, and batteries that are very high grade batteries, and also technically very competent in terms of quality. Recently, all the production, or most of all the production from Ombra Muerto, has been sold for the number of years to Panasonic. And Panasonic is the one that makes the batteries for Tesla. Yeah. So when you know Tesla, the association with quality comes first. So when you hear some other companies saying that, you know, brine is not pure, you have problems, you cannot get to hydroxide. Hydroxide is what's required for the high-end batteries. That's not necessarily true, because quietly Ombra Muerto has been putting most of its production into the Tesla's battery that you see running around for a long time now. So, and going back to your comment, high grade, low impurities, we do have that setting. And Livent, 30 plus years ago, when they were doing a study and where to start the operations, there was not lithium revolution, and they could pick the best salt flat in Argentina, and they took Hombre Muerto for that reason. Fast forward to last year, March last year, POSCO paid $280 million for 2.5 million tons of lithium carbonate equivalent from Galaxy. So that's the northern part of Sal de Vida. Just as a reference, we have close to 2.1 million tons of resource already quantified from the same system. So that puts a really interesting number. I'm not implying that we're worth that number, but you know, when the market turns, we're definitely going to be re-rated. And what is important to have high grade and low impurities is because you have low operating costs. And the less impurity you have, the cheaper it is to operate, and the less complexity is to clean your brine into the next process.
So do you plan to take the product right through to the lithium hydroxide, or will you be selling a carbonate product?
Well, we're going on a step-by-step, Peter. The first step that we're actually doing is to prove that our concentrate, which is the front end of the study, the concentrate can yield high concentrate levels of lithium in the concentrate. High level concentrate means that it gives more flexibility going into the processing plant. Sure. And when you have high level concentrate, your carbonate plant becomes smaller because your volumes to be treated are smaller as well. So we would like to have less complexity if we can. Our first part of the study is to take our product into carbonate. Lithium hydroxide is a next level of complexity. As a small company, we're not thinking that way yet, because lithium brine is more of a chemical exercise. So lithium in general is a chemical exercise. Yeah. And so we want to get the chemistry right. We want to get this on a step-by-step. So the maximum level of processing that we're doing at this stage is just to take the our brine into concentrate.
Yes, it's very much a chemistry set.
Correct.
Is your scoping study looking at a range of potential product sizes, you know, tonnage producing, you know, 10,000, 20,000? What sort of size would you... I mean, clearly it's a big system. You could go to a fairly large output.
Well, we're looking at different avenues. As we advance in the scoping study, we have identified a few ideas we're going to be testing at the pre-feasibility level. So imagine we have a base case now. And yep. From that base case, we're going to start flexing a few of the assumptions. And then we're going to be able to make a call as which way we're going to go in the pre-feasibility study that is they're going to be tested.
What sort of costs are achieved by your neighbours in the area in terms of, you know, dollars per tonne of carbonate or hydroxide delivered?
Well, if you look at real data, that's Livent, our neighbours, and they are around $3,500 a tonne. So if you look at Galaxy studies, they don't deviate too much from that.
Mm. Is that for hydroxide?
No, that's for carbonate equivalent.
Carbonate, okay, yeah. And so the carbonate currently about $6,700, $7,000 US a ton. It's really trading at about a third of the price it was 3 years ago. And really, you know, from what I'm seeing, the market is about to have to absorb a lot more demand because all of these electric vehicles that'll be on the market in 2022 and 23 and beyond.
Yeah, looking forward into where the lithium is going, it's fantastic. You know, I remember mentioning at after Tesla Day is that the target set by Tesla to 2030, that was the target of the assumption of the global production at that year. Now Tesla said that they're going to do that by themselves. You have to add the rest of the world to that. So yeah. We're all going to be really busy.
The BMW, the Mercedes, and all the others, Toyota.
Yeah. Add Europe, add the US, add Japan, add China, add everyone else, including the cats and dogs, everyone. You know, we're all going to be busy trying to get lithium out of the ground. And it's a chemical exercise. So it takes a little while to get it right. And we are against the time, so that's why I'm pushing things as quick as I can. My motto is to take Galan to production as soon as we can as well. So those are the...
Yeah. So JP, just quickly with your timeline there, you say your scoping study, you're aiming to get that out middle of next year, and then that you'd go into a pre-feasibility and then a feasibility study through 21, 22.
It's a bit closer than that. Our scoping study is currently being performed by Worley, and they're doing that, the Worley study in Chile. And we expect to have the results by late November or early December, the latest.
Okay.
As soon after that, we're going to digest the data and we'll commence a new year with a feasibility study. We expect, two quarters of pre-feasibility and then a year of feasibility. So by second half of 2022, or probably Q3 2022, we should be finalizing our feasibility study. Yeah, if Fantastic. We keep moving in this track.
And that really fits in nicely with what we're thinking about the market for lithium going forward anyway. That's, you wouldn't want to be in production at the current price of lithium at, wait until the price gets back up to $8 or $9, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, so JP, that's been very educational, and I think the listener now will have a very good idea of what to expect from the company with the results from the scoping study coming out later this year, and then the activity that goes with the pre-feasibility and the feasibility studies in subsequent years. So thank you for coming in to Stockhead today, and we will look forward to catching up with you once that scoping study has been delivered.
Well, we look forward to that, and as soon as we have results, I would like to explain all little details and what it means compared to our neighbours and compared to the industry. And that'll be a fantastic opportunity to tell the audience what we're about. So thanks very much for the intro, and appreciate the time, and look forward to talking to you again.